Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And at 11 minutes after 12 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here. We'll talk farmers markets a little bit later in the program with the executive director of the Illinois Farmers Market Association. They had their big convention last week, but here we are. Spring starts today, so why not go out and dig in the dirt and talk about when the farmers markets will be opening near you. Janae Myers is the CEO of Chicago Care. She'll be along a little bit later in the program as well as we talk about the 25th annual Servathon, where businesses get involved in helping people out. I think this year they're focusing on Chicago public schools. So we start on Tuesdays, though, with Wall Street and John Najeri, and you see him on CNBC. Follow him on Facebook, on Twitter at John Najarian, and he joins us to talk about what he's seeing on Wall Street on Tuesdays. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Doesn't feel like the first day of spring out here. We're supposed to get pounded with snow in New York.
Yeah, well, there's no snow here. It does kind of feel like March 20th here because it's a little bit raw, a little bit of sun, but kind of chilly, too. The bad news is Mark Zuckerberg lost, $5 billion yesterday. The good news is he's still got more, and he's going to lose some more today, right? Facebook is down, last I saw, about 5% in trading today.
That's correct. It wasn't a data breach, but it was a data use that then was used to expand their exploitation of people's fears as well as their likes for the election, apparently, through that Cambridge Analytica company. But it's just one of the many times when Facebook has either willingly or unwillingly participated in things like this, where people don't really understand all the data that they give Facebook is Facebook's to do with what they please.
And in this case, and I know, you know, people are talking about, well, Obama did this and all of that, and I think there are differences. But in this case, people were signing up for one particular survey. So they did. They gave away their privacy for this survey. But then that survey taker gave the data to Cambridge Analytica. Is that so sort of secondhand, and that's the problem? That's the breach or whatever term you used?
Yeah, and okay. I still don't term it a breach, but no. You're correct. What happens is they give you a pop-up survey. You could elect to click through Facebook to get to that survey, and if you did that, for instance, this is one of the ways they mined it, then the data that basically gets them in through the back door into Facebook through that survey. And even though they only got about, 200,000 people that way, it multiplies dramatically because every person that they got to has X amount of friends, and they were then able to get into those friends' accounts as well.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put down your term breach because I had said breach. Do you remember what the term was you used? Because I think it was a better one.
Usage.
Share or something like that.
Yeah, they just they have the data, and I think ultimately what ends up happening is certainly overseas they have a higher degree of ownership of their data, and I think that's likely to happen here as well, Stephen. Ultimately, that results in either people getting a little small revenue stream from their data if they agree to let it be shared, or perhaps they could do like they do in the UK and Europe, and that is say, take me off. I don't want any of my data shared through this particular app, and then they have to abide by that.
All right, so all of this results in bad news for Facebook, but some of the other social media companies were suffering as well, correct?
Absolutely. Yesterday, in fact, Twitter was only down 3% as Facebook fell by 7%. And some people were saying, well, that's because they're just not as good at mining your data over there at Twitter. And I thought that was thin gruel. That was not exactly a great explanation for why I'd want to own Twitter. Sure enough, they're down 10% today, wow. And Israel is going after them. Snapchat is down. Anybody except some of the social stocks that have a lot of credit card data, they have more hardened files. Doesn't mean they're unhackable. But Amazon and Netflix, for instance, stocks that come up in that FANG discussion, they are not seeing the same hits. It's Google, it's Facebook, it's Snapchat, it's Twitch. You know, it's anybody who doesn't have those hardened firewalls to prevent this kind of data mining.
All this, and yet the broader industry, especially the Dow, is in positive territory today. It's off its highs, but still up. Is that about the Fed tomorrow, or what's leading to the green on the screen?
I think that and a little bit of bounce from yesterday. We had a pretty significant pop in volatility or risk premium in the market yesterday, and I think the Dow is more than any of the other indices reacting to a perhaps a little bit of selling that was unjustified. Certainly, we do justify the selling in the NASDAQ because Facebook itself was 15% of the NASDAQ drop, and then those other social stocks contributed a lot as well.
You mentioned volatility. I want to read a quote from you, and you tell me if it's right and if it is what it okay. What you make of it. The S&P 500 has now seen 16 days of plus or minus 1% moves in either direction since the start of February. So 1% up or down 16 times since February. When you look at the 13 months before February, it had only happened 10 times.
It tells you exactly how volatile or exactly how much risk premium has come into the market because of uncertainty, because of Russia, because of Trump, because of events like Facebook. How fast will the Fed move? It's all of that. I can't remember, Stephen, a time when we've had as much thrown at the market, and yet we're still just, you know, what, 4 or 5% off the all-time high? If you're looking for something to feel a little better about, that would be one thing, is that we're still so near these all-time highs for the market, but there have definitely been some stocks that have had significant haircuts from those highs.
I search my entire life in search of finding things to feel good about, John, so I appreciate that.
Me too.
What are you watching today? What are you looking at today, John?
Yeah.
Are you there?
We're looking at Cigna. Yeah, okay. It's a healthcare stock, Cigna. We're looking at that one because unusual call activity 3 days in a row in this one. And even though it's down a dollar today, the president was talking yesterday about subsidies for healthcare stocks. These guys would certainly benefit from that. So we were buying in Cigna, symbol CI. We were buying that today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Stephen.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Janie Maxwell is on a phone line as she is the executive director of the Illinois Farmers Market Association. Janie, welcome to the Business Lunch. I'm glad you could squeeze us in today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, when we were switching shows here, I was talking to Bill and Wendy. I said, you know, Good Friday, that's when you're supposed to plant your potatoes. And they just kind of looked at me with blank stares. But, you know, it is time, right, to start planting lettuce and things like that. So I would imagine the produce that we're going to buy in June is being put into the ground just now by the farmers from the farmers markets.
I would think so. I would think there has been a lot of planning and dreaming about what this next season is going to look like, and now it's actually being implemented.
How many farmers markets are there in Illinois?
Wait, you know, we would love to know the answer to that question, but farmers markets are very independent, and some of them come, some of them go, some of them have had a long, long history. So we think there are about 400 across the state of Illinois. But we're not sure on a firm number.
If you don't have a firm number, I guess it would be hard then to talk about economic impact or annual sales or things like that. Any statistics toward that?
We don't have aggregated statistics. We are really working hard. We just had a conference last week with farmers market managers and producers from across the state. One of the things we're really encouraging them to do is to tell their story, but to tell their story by collecting metrics and data about their markets so that we can better talk about the economic impact of a farmers market on a community. We have individual stories. You have a story like Rockford that put in a farmers market. We actually had presentations from one of the vendors that started at the Rockford Market and is now a brick and mortar store in the Rockford area. That has happened to a number of the people that started to vend at the Rockford Market. So we have stories like that, but we're trying to get people to put numbers with those stories so we can tell a little bit better what the economic impact
is. I also wonder about the farmer and who the farmer is who sells at a farmer's market. You know, I grew up in Kankakee County, and in the southern part of the county, there's the Hookster Farms and others, and, you know, they bring fruit and vegetable, I know, to farmer's markets. But, you know, I think sometimes we have this idea that it's a small plot where someone's growing their crops and bringing it to town, which might have been the original idea. Give me an idea. I mean, how many little people and how many big people make up a farmer's market?
You know, that's really going to depend. And anymore with some of the advances in farming, for example, I know of a farm out here in the Elburn area that on about an acre produced almost 15,000 pounds of food last year.
Wow.
Yeah. So sometimes size doesn't matter as much, but we are seeing small beginning farmers starting on very small pieces of land but able to produce large volumes of food. And then we do have some of the more seasoned growers that are able to secure larger parcels and then produce a larger amount of produce over the season.
I have this feeling I'm asking you about numbers you just don't have yet as you try to as you get these wily farmers organized. But I wonder how many of the farmers who sell crops at farmers markets sell only at farmers markets, and what percentage of them would be just a part of their business plan. I want you to go to work on that one, Janie, and let me know next year.
I do have a number on that one.
Oh, good. Okay.
The Farmers Market Coalition, who is our national umbrella organization of farmers markets, tells us that about 25% of all farmers at farmers markets sell exclusively at farmers markets.
Wow. Okay.
So that means, you know, that's a pretty big number.
I think so too.
And then we also have the other ones, other producers that will sell to a variety of wholesale or retail outlets, or maybe on farm.
Yeah, 25% is bigger than I would have thought. All right, so here we are, March 20th. When do the first markets open?
You know, we actually are fortunate in Northern Illinois here. We actually have a number of winter markets that are still going. If you want a list of those, they're on our ilfma.org website. So you could catch the tail end of some of our markets that are able to provide produce and, you know, maybe some of the protein foods and breads and value-added products throughout the season. But we usually see the last week of May, first week of June, as this time when most of the local farmers markets start to ramp up.
Janie Maxwell, Executive Director, Illinois Farmers Market Association. Great to talk to you. Let's do it again.
All right. Thank you so much.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:38 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Oh, I'm excited about this. Peg Kiner is in the studio. She's the Director of Innovation at GEMS World Academy. Peg, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me here.
All right, so we have to start by just telling me a little bit about the GEMS World Academy, because I really know nothing about it, and sounds really cool.
Sure. GEMS World Academy Chicago is the school from GEMS Education, and we are the only school in all the Americas from GEMS Education. We're a 10-story preschool through 9th grade right now, to 12th grade very soon, and we're an international baccalaureate, and I love working there.
And it started in Dubai?
Yes,
and
started in Dubai.
All over the world? Or?
Yeah, my closest partners are actually Singapore, Switzerland, and Dubai.
Oh, my gosh. And you have how many students now?
We have about 420, and we're continuing to grow.
And you're right across the river, kind of where WGN Studios are moving, East Wacker Drive.
Yeah, just a quick walk.
Where do your students come from?
We have students from 2 hours south, 2 hours west, and 2 hours north. People come in from all over to come to our school.
And they're like, their parents are commuters and they bring their kids in?
Often that's the case, yeah.
That's exciting. How long has the school been open?
It's been open 4 years and I've been there for 3.
You just exude enthusiasm, I have to tell you. So I love talking to you about it. All right, so tell me about this, what we're really here to talk about, the Global Design Challenge, GEMS Global Design Challenge. Seems like a pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I'm the Director of Innovation at GEMS, but I'm also United Nations Chapter of Chicago Global Goal Ambassador. And I want to create space for students in the city of Chicago to design solutions to problems they care about. So on April 21st and 22nd, we are opening up the doors of our school to invite students in from 5th grade through 10th grade to come together, create teams with the support of mentors, and learn more about how they could solve problems about 5 selected global goals.
What are the goals?
No poverty, life on land, life below water, gender equality, and clean water and sanitation.
Okay, so if you are the parent of a kid who is pretty innovative or into these things and hearing this, how do you get involved? How do you jump in on it?
Well, Steve, please head to GEMSGlobalDesignChallenge.com.
And the information is all there?
Everything is there.
What comes first here? I mean, is it someone who happens to be interested in life underwater, or is it someone who just has a really inquisitive mind and says, oh, that might be a match for me, I'm going to go that way?
Yeah, I think it's about finding kids who are passionate about making a change in their world. And of the 17 global goals we could have chosen, these are 5 that our students were passionate about that they wanted to work on. Really, it's about making space. So do you have a kid who's an inquirer, who wants to do good in the world, who wants to be creative and collaborative? Then you should sign them up.
Is this about identifying projects that are already in a kid's head, or about really just identifying inquiring minds?
I think inquiring minds. And once they understand, with the help of design mentors and technical mentors, then they'll be able to come up with a solution.
And why is it that you're doing this, that you're offering this so far outside the school?
I'm just so passionate about making sure that all students in the Chicagoland area have access to a space to solve the problems to the things they care about.
And so what? Tell me again. So you apply. If you're accepted, you got room for 150 kids. You come in, and then what happens during that time?
Well, over the course of 2 days.
I mean, because I'm thinking people aren't going to leave having solved the crisis of poverty, right? Good luck, but you're probably not going to solve that in 2 days.
Yes, these are large problems, but it's all about local action. So over the course of the 2 days, the students are going to learn design sprints from local mentors to learn the process of ideating through a solution. And then they'll be pitching their solutions to judges, and there will be a top overall 3. We also have a really exciting opportunity, the Lemelson MIT program. It's part of the School of Engineering at MIT. We'll be there to give a special prize for the best product.
So you're looking for students who will compete. Mm-hmm. Right, and the prize is?
We have 3 prizes for the top 3 overall, $7,500, $5,000, and $2,500, and those will be given away in kind of like gift certificates to further the education of the students.
And then so those are the students, but you could use some mentors too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So tell me about what are you looking for in mentors?
We're looking for mentors who are going to help students design solutions. So if you are a technical mentor out there, maybe an app developer or someone who's done a campaign development, we need you to come to our website and apply to help students design solutions for the future.
That's so exciting. Let's go back to the school then. I'm feeling like it's not your typical run-of-the-mill school. I mean, how much of it is about innovation?
Well, so much of it is embedded in our units of inquiry. It's a passion for us to make
now,
sure
I would say subjects, but you called them units of inquiry.
Yes. Yeah, because we're international baccalaureate, our program development is called units of inquiry. So students are in 6-week units at a time, investigating a specific topic.
Nice. Okay, and so let's give one more time the information for people. If they want to have their son or daughter maybe compete or be part of this, where do they find more information?
Please find us at GEMS Global Design Challenge. com.
Peg Kiner is the Director of Innovation at GEMS World Academy. Hey, it's great to talk to you, and let's do it again, especially we're going to be neighbors soon.
Sounds good, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. So the buzz this week is that Amazon Scouts will be here in Chicago researching potential sites to build their new HQ2. The Tribune shared all the proposed renderings for the 10 different sites from Schaumburg to the lakefront. If we actually end up getting this, Amazon would undoubtedly take the city to the next level on the international stage. But have you thought about how your business could be impacted? You better do your research. You can also learn about some of the best event spaces in the city according to the compiled list out of Cranes. In-person events are more important than ever these days, since everything is about making that digital to in-person shift. Whether it's your first networking event or even closing the deal on a round of funding, never underestimate the importance of atmosphere. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
All right, Janae Myers is in the studio. She is the CEO of Chicago Cares, and they've got a big drive coming up. Janae, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you.
Have we never talked before?
I don't think we haven't, no.
Okay, well, this is our first time, so that'll be great. All right, so tell me about the Servathon that's coming up, but first of all, Chicago Cares and what you're involved in.
Sure. So Chicago Cares is the city's largest nonprofit volunteer organization, and our mission is to mobilize volunteers to empower, strengthen, and unify Chicago.
You know, this is a business show, and so we talk about business opportunities this way, and this is a way for a business to really strengthen its own community by helping the other communities.
Yeah, so many of the folks that live downtown or work downtown, you know, the folks that work at these companies live out in the neighborhoods. So the work that we do out in Chicago's neighborhoods and communities, it's a great way for corporations to get involved.
And you know, the other thing is a lot of them don't live in the neighborhoods.
That too, which a is lot of them,
you're right,
the
they
suburbs,
come, they come from Schaumburg or yeah. Deer. I come from
yeah.
Deerfield.
Yeah.
And then you get an idea of what the neighborhoods are like and you really don't know.
That's right. When all you kind of experience is downtown, to really get a flavor of what Chicago truly is, to see and experience the neighborhoods is something. And to do it through service is a non-confrontational, easy way to go about exploring a neighborhood and a community.
So you're looking for 5,000 volunteers, right?
Yes. So Servathon is Saturday, June 23rd. We normally recruit about 5,000 volunteers, and the majority of that are corporate teams, right? So Pepsi and Accenture, Deloitte, we have teams that come out, and it's a great way for them to just build camaraderie amongst each other, but to then give back to the neighborhoods that they live and work in.
And Pepsi's always trying to kick Deloitte's butt, too, as I recall.
Always.
But can individuals volunteer too?
Yes, absolutely. So we have opportunities for individuals. Joe and Jane Chicagoan can absolutely sign up as well. In fact, that's the big push I also want, is not just corporations, but for average Chicagoans to know that this should be a rite of passage in Chicago to participate.
It's interesting to me that you're focusing on Chicago public schools and high schools this year.
Yes.
Tell me how you got there.
So we partnered with Generation All, which Generation All is focusing on neighborhood high schools and really trying to emphasize the fact when we have a city of choice when it comes to education and schools, often neighborhood schools are left behind. Mm-hmm. So this is an opportunity for us to A, lift up the profile of those neighborhoods and those communities and tell a very different story to both the general public and those in the neighborhood.
So what kinds of things will people be doing at the schools?
A little bit of everything. So some of these neighborhood high schools have been around for over 100 years.
Beautiful old buildings.
Gorgeous old buildings, but lots of maintenance goes into that, right? So a lot of painting, a lot of kind of beautification work, facilities work, etc., and just really sprucing up those schools so that the students have a great atmosphere and the teachers as well to be in every day.
I also think, you know, going back to what I said before, it's a great opportunity for people to just have a better understanding of what's going on. You know, because we create these scenarios.
Yes.
And usually they're not right. They might be a little too rosy or they might not be rosy at all.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you have perceptions about the neighborhood, right, and what you hear on TV or the news or you read in the papers, especially about some communities on the south and west side of Chicago, you can't really believe everything you hear. And I think until you actually get to a neighborhood and connect with another human being who doesn't look like you, who isn't from the same socioeconomic class, and you have a conversation with them and you start to realize that they want the same thing for their children. They want the same thing for their livelihood. And you have those kind of commonalities and you realize there's so much more that unites us than really divides us.
I was going to say, they don't look like you. They don't have the money that you might have. But man, they are a lot like you.
Yes, incredibly.
Janae Myers is the CEO of Chicago Cares. Where do people sign up? Where do businesses find more information?
ChicagoCares.org. You can find it all on our website.
All right. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Thank you.